All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of Canucks Conversation, brought to you, as always, by the 2023 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that is designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain, whether it's rain, snow, mud, a 2-1 loss to the Washington Capitals. The BZ4X will get you through it all. And of course, we are coming to you from the iconic Wall Center in downtown Vancouver. Looking for your next meeting space? Contact the Wall Center for all your event needs at sales@wallcenter.com. David Quadrelli, alongside Harmon Dial, our technical producer, the man at the controls, hitting switches, is Grady Sass. What a beautiful weekend on the outside of Rogers Arena.
Yeah, I mean, it sure looked like the Canucks were enjoying it a little bit too much.
You know what? Free pass. Let's just end the show right now, because free pass, that weather this weekend was awesome. I was having so much fun this weekend.
Yeah, I was joking before the show started, and obviously part of it is because the lighting in our studio is a little bit wonky. But
a little tan.
You look very tanned on video today.
Well, I was telling you, I got some color. I got some color today. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I look whiter on the show than you do, just because of how the lighting is.
We've had some people point that out, too.
We put the sun filter on quads today.
That's right. I enjoyed the sun a lot. I got a little tan, as you can see. It was a good time. I was just out in the sun a lot, out with the dog. It was so much fun. But let's not waste any more time.
Yeah, clearly weren't in Rogers Arena, because you're buzzing. Meanwhile, I feel like everybody who was actually in the building for that game, even though the weather is beautiful, is still scarred from watching that game in person.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it on TV, and then I did Rinkwide with J-Pat, so I just talk about it even more. I just look, man, I'm thinking positively. I did my work, and then I was back outside. Like that's actually accurate. Every minute of Saturday that I didn't have to sit and watch a Canucks game, I was outside the whole time. The whole day I was outside. It was great. It was so much fun. Anyways, I like the sun a lot. Let's talk about it. 2-1 loss to the Washington Capitals. Harm, this game, the way I summed it up and the way I'll sum it up on this show as well, is that it was a very boring first period. Both teams came out just looking lifeless in the first period. It wasn't even like, oh, this is a tight checking game. This is like, no, this is two teams playing poorly. Like, this is a bad game of hockey that we're watching right now. That's what it was in the first period. In the second period, we saw that clip of Spencer Carberry yelling at his team. Sure enough, the Capitals come out firing. The Canucks do not. And we should mention as well, Brock Besser scores early, as 35th of the year. 36th? 36th. 35th? I don't know.
I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, it's okay. Bester scores early, and then, like I said, boring first period. Second period, the Capitals wake up. The Canucks do not. In the third period, the Canucks are left trying to play catch-up. Does not work out.
Yeah.
36th.
I'll amend what you said about the first period just to say that for the first few minutes, I actually thought the Canucks had some jump. Not that they were dominating or anything, but leading up to the goal, I thought they were playing well. I thought Washington was having a lot of troubles breaking the puck out, both because of Vancouver's pressure, but also just them making unforced errors. So early on, I felt the Canucks were controlling play in the offensive end. But what it felt like was as soon as they went up 1-0, it's as if they kicked their feet up, got complacent, and went, well, all right, the Caps are one of the lowest scoring teams in the NHL. This one's in the bag, boys. That's how it felt like. The energy that they had applying pressure, controlling play, started to dwindle as soon as they went up 1-0.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of the theme of today's show, it feels like, is that we're going to be talking about how good teams in the past, we've seen this, playoff-bound teams, teams that know they're going to the playoffs, they do kick their feet up a little bit. And that's the thing that I kind of want to contextualize it. Yes, that's concerning and you want to see them play more, but good teams do this. Like, we've seen good playoff teams do this before, and sure enough, they wake up for the playoffs. I will say, I actually have liked the Canucks 5-on-5 play, all things considered. Even in that game, that third period, and people are like, where's Elias Pettersson? I know the point totals aren't great, which is funny enough. But in the past, I've said Elias Pettersson needs a bottom line. I thought he had that bottom line on Saturday night. Like, I thought Elias Pettersson was fine, especially in the third period. I actually thought he was one of the Canucks' best players in the third period of the game on Saturday night. I thought he was one of the guys that was really giving a bleep in the final period there. And yes, maybe too little too late, but his wingers, again, it comes back to this conversation of his wingers, and as we'll see shortly here. Actually, let's bring it up, Gray. Let's bring up the line combos. Elias Pettersson gets himself some new wingers, as does the rest of the team. They're a huge shakeup today at Canucks practice. We'll pull up the lines here. But I thought that Pettersson was fine in the third period, especially. Like, I'm not pinning that loss on Pettersson. Yeah, you'd like a goal. You'd like more production, of course. But as somebody who's come on this show and criticized him before, like, I haven't been shy to do that. I thought he was fine in the third period. He actually kind of stood out to me as one of their better players. So now he's with Nils Höglander and Connor Garland. I really like that. I really like that line combo. And again, you didn't want to have to break up that third line in any capacity. But look, Lindholm, Garland, and Podkolzin, it started to not work either. Like, that started to not be a good line for them. And they need to have that power in the top six. Pia Suter goes down to play with JT Miller and Brock Besser. Ilya Mikheyev with Elias Lindholm and Sam Lafferty. I want to talk about Elias Lindholm, but we'll save that. We'll talk about it after. Nils Amon slots back in. Teddy Bluger, Vasily Podkolzin on the fourth line. And then the defense pairs, Cole Myers, Susi Sidorov, and Hughes Hronek.
Yeah, so first of all, I'll agree that Pettersson is good in the third period. The first two periods, I thought he was still pretty
fighting the puck.
I thought JT Miller had a really off game as well, just mm-hmm. in terms of the number of giveaways, which is fine. He's been so unbelievable this year that you're definitely going to give him a pass. In terms of Garland and Pettersson playing together, I was interested to look at the data of how have they looked together, because intuitively you look at two players that are pretty strong possession drivers and you'd think they should cook some good results together. It hasn't felt that way with the eye test, and the numbers sort of back that up as well, where in 5 and 5 minutes together lifetime, Pettersson and Garland have only controlled 48% of shot attempts, just a fraction over 50% of scoring chances, and they are positive in terms of 25 goals for and 22 against, but Elias Pettersson and Connor Garland always drive really strong goal differentials anyway. Like, 25 for and against isn't that, like, plus three isn't decisive of a margin. And I think part of it is because Garland is a player who relies on puck control. He's somebody that needs it on a stick, and Pettersson can, when he's rolling, be that type of player as well. And Garland, of course, can be a little bit unpredictable to play with because of his tendencies. It takes a certain type of player to understand his reads and some time to really click and mesh with him. So that's going to be interesting to see now that they play together, because theoretically you would look at that line on paper and go, I like that line, but for whatever reason, Garland and Pettersson in the past haven't brought out the best in each other.
I thought about Elias Pettersson. I saw him in the third, especially. But the thing that made me start to say, okay, yeah, maybe it is the wingers, is there was a sequence where, and look, Pod Colson's trying his hardest. Pod Colson is going, like, Pod Colson's at least earned a spot in this lineup for the time being, right? Like, I think Pod Colson should stay in this lineup. But there was a moment where Pettersson was kind of waiting for him to go to the net, and Pod Colson was taking a little too long, and Pettersson just threw the puck there anyway. And it would have been a backdoor tap and if Pod Colson had gotten on his horse and got there, but it was kind of like he came into the zone, took a second to realize that he needed to go straight to the net, because he would have had a step on the defender is how I remember the play. And Pettersson just threw it there anyways. And it was just funny to me because I was like, that almost feels like Pettersson trying to show everybody like, hey, look, if I had somebody that was going to the net, or if I had somebody that thought the game as quickly and effectively as I do, or even close to as well as I do, that puck is in the back of the net. So I thought Pettersson was fine in that third period. Again, like you said, the first and second period fighting the puck, that's been a theme. That's something that you want to see out of his game. But again, I don't know, Harm. I'm looking at these whole, the last month as a whole, really. And I'm trying to think about, okay, what, like, let's provide some context here. Obviously, they have that 4-game win streak to start the month of March. And that's great. That was awesome. And we were talking about, yeah, they look so good. They look so great. First 40 minutes against Colorado, they keep it up. Like, they're suffocating Colorado. They look awesome. They look like this great team that's going to be a force in the playoffs. They're playing to all their staples. They're doing everything correctly. Then in the final 20 minutes against Colorado, 21 minutes, they start to fall off. Then that carries on into the Washington game where they're just kind of like, okay, we're going to take Washington lightly, and this team can't take anyone lightly at this time of year. Like, they need to kind of fine-tune themselves for the playoffs. Alternatively, like I said, I did like their 5-on-5 play. The thing that stands out to me the most, Harm, and the thing that I'm most concerned about, like, I'm not concerned about wins and losses right now. You're just not. I'm not too concerned about the 5-on-5 play. Again, I think some of these guys will figure it out. I think Dakota Joshua is going to come back and really improve it. The thing I am worried about, Harm, because you don't have the, well, this person's going to come back or this is going to change by playoffs, like we do with Joshua at 5-on-5 and Demko, and Dismith's been good. But my point here, the thing that isn't going to change is the power play. 15.1% success rate since the start of February. They're too good to be that bad for this long. You cannot be playing like that when you're this team's power play. And that's been a conversation that we've been having. And I feel like we need to keep having, because that's the thing that concerns me the most about this team right now. I don't care about your results right now, but I do care about the power play that's operating at full capacity. Like, the power play has everybody on it right now that is going to be on it when they are in the playoffs. What's going to change in the playoffs? They're going to get less power plays. That means they need to be even more efficient than they are right now. That's the thing that concerns me about this team, is the power play.
Yeah, and that was a difference maker against Colorado as well, of course. I think it also brings to light a bigger conversation that manufacturing offense and scoring goals hasn't been as easy since the All-Star break for this team. Part of it is also at 5-on-5. Like, when you look back at the third period of that Washington game, yes, they had a lot of possession, and there were a lot of games where, like, this team now is at the point where they control possession at 5-on-5 like a bona fide contender. What hasn't been as easy at times has been translating that possession into high danger chances, because number one, this team doesn't have an ability to create chances off the rush. We remember some of those statistics earlier in the year from SportLogic that show that Vancouver's 32nd in the NHL at generating rush chances. Now, in the first half of the season, they were still first in the NHL in rush goals.
In actual goals, yes.
Part of it was because you have finishers like Pettersson, like Miller, like Besser, but part of it was also they had some bounces go their way. Like, that's part of the whole, like, quote-unquote PDO regression, mm-hmm. is they're not getting as many rush goals, which highlights then that, okay, they don't create off transition. Now the only way they create offense, it has to sort of be, you know, dump and chase. And look, dump and chase has been so successful for this team in terms of being a playing style that helps them be structured defensively. They've scored goals for most of the year. It's not a problem, but you do notice in that Washington game, for example, to go back to it, how many times they were trying to shoot for tips and deflections, and they've been really good at getting those, but they just kept missing the net.
Yep.
Or they couldn't get bounces to go their way. And that's something that you wonder about going into playoffs, is you're playing the style where your offense is, okay, let's recover the puck on the forecheck. And JT Miller, to me, is one of the only players on this team that really consistently can make passes into the slot. That's the other thing that stood out, was there were a lot of like hope passes into the slot. I don't know if you noticed as well, where it's like they were carrying the puck up the ice, and there isn't an immediate scoring chance or passing option that looks viable, but there are a couple players driving the slot, and you're like, okay, let's just throw the puck into the middle, and let's hope that it hits the stick of a teammate, or that we get a fortunate bounce, or that we create some chaos. And a lot of times it would harmlessly go through and hit nobody, or it would hit a capital stick. And then again, when they would funnel the puck back to the point, when they were cycling, they just couldn't get their shots through. They couldn't get the tips. A lot of missing the net quite often. That's something that I do wonder, because early in the season, it felt like they were getting a lot of those bounces where every shot from the point was hitting a stick that would then beat the goaltender, or it would create a fortunate rebound. And since the All-Star break, it seems like that hasn't happened as often.
You just haven't got those bounces. And how do you react when you don't get those bounces? And right now, I don't think we like how the team is reacting when they don't get those bounces. Again, it's adversity, right? Like, this team's facing some adversity right now. I still say that, again, I don't want to do the whole, well, what if that puck went in, or what if they got this in? How different is the conversation? I just think the biggest thing for me is the power play still. Like, not to bring the conversation away from that, but like, I still think the power play is the most concerning thing about this team, because that's the thing that isn't going to change for the playoffs. Or, excuse me, isn't going to change in terms of what's happening on it, aside from the guys trying harder and changing up what they're doing. And right now, it's almost 2 full months of the power play just being absolutely woeful. Like, awful. Awful. They were like, I gotta look it up. I think they were like a 30% in January, right?
I don't remember their exact numbers in January.
I'm gonna find it right now.
It feels like a combination of things when we are talking about the power play, though. It isn't just one really obvious
problem that
sticks out, because part of it is, like, even when they do generate looks, they're just not able to finish right now. Like, you think about Pedersen's chance off of the Miller cross-seam pass.
The softy into Lindgren's glove.
Normally, that's the type of chance that Pedersen buries.
Yep.
They are also missing some of their passes that are meant to be for redirections. Like, when Miller was walking on that same power play, Miller was walking down the left half wall. This was a missed shot that I had jotted down here. But, like, they're missing their shots for deflections. They're missing their shots that are meant to be on net. And even, like, I have one play down here. Quinn had the lane to walk straight down Main Street from a position that he scored from, you know, pretty similar to the LA game on the last road trip. And he passed off to the side to Pedersen, who wasn't in a dangerous shooting location. So it just feels like, whether you want to call it timing, rhythm, just missing the mark, there are a lot of things that just aren't clicking for this group right now.
You've still got 4 or 5 weeks to figure it out, so I'm not too worried about that. I'm just saying that, look, I know they have to get back to their staples, but I think they showed they can do that. And once they do that, they're going to find success. And we've seen them do it. We've seen this power play be successful, but we haven't seen them go away from their staples for 2 months, but we have seen them be very lackluster on the power play for about 2 months now. And yes, I was wondering, 30.3% in January 2024, 15% since then.
One thing that I do keep coming back to is, how do you best take advantage of that fifth guy on the power play? That fourth forward, if you want to call it, right? Because he was obviously going to man the point. Early in the season, it was obviously Andre Kuzmenko, and nothing went through him. Let's be honest, Kuzmenko was just there. He was an extra guy to make sure you wouldn't turn the puck over. He was an extra passing option, but he wasn't really a dangerous threat on the power play. You think about when Lindholm was acquired, he wasn't really a threat on PP1, and according to practice lines today, it seems like he's back there. For a short while, was it last game, they had Pia Suter there?
Yes.
Pia Suter, I don't feel like he's a threat on the power play. Connor Garland had an opportunity for a bit there. It feels like that fifth guy isn't really a threat.
Isn't really there, so it's almost like they're just going to 4-on-4.
Yeah, it's like, formation-wise, yes, you have an extra player, but that fifth guy isn't a legit, whether it's a shooting threat or a playmaker or a dangerous net front presence who can be both a playmaker below the goal line and also screen goaltenders. It sort of feels like they're missing another legit threat on that unit.
What is the solution? This is kind of what I've been trying to think about over the weekend, was like, what is the solution? Because you think about, okay, shoot more pucks. That's what we were talking about last month, but is that going to fix it? Like, I think one, they need some dumb luck, but two, they also just need to move again. I feel like anytime this power play's had success, they've been moving around, and I just feel like there's such a lack of movement. Like, everybody hates watching the puck just go from the top of the umbrella around to Miller, back to Hughes, back to Pettersson, back to Hughes, back to Miller. And like you said, there's no threat on the inside. Like, that's where goals happen, is the inside, right? And Rick Tocchet was talking about that. Again, it was even strength play that he was talking about it. But the power play, too. Like, get inside. There's been opportunities where, or moments where I've seen them throw the puck into the crease, and then like chaos happens and it looks like they're going to be able to finish and they're not getting the bounces there, but just create more of those chances. Like, create more of those opportunities where you just put the puck on net, crash to the middle. You've got more guys, put it in the back of the net.
I'll be honest. I don't know what the solution is.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pretend to sit here and say, oh, I know that this or that is the solution for how to fix this.
I know what it is, but I'm not telling anybody.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I'm not going to say.
Yeah. Rick Tocchet's going right. to pay you a lot of money.
Have to ask me about
six figures plus for the answer.
Tyler Myers, net front. You know that'd be my answer.
Oh, my God.
Rick Tocchet's like, all right, I heard you saying you know the answer to our power play. What is it? Well, Tyler Myers, net front.
And he'd immediately be like, can I sue this guy for my money back?
Yeah. And if that doesn't work, Nikita Zadorov and Tyler Myers, figure it out. Okay. Did you have anything else on that game? I did want to say I thought Casey Smith's been fine since Demko's gone down. The way I kind of looked at it was maybe that game gets to overtime because DeSmith makes an extra save. I didn't like DeSmith on that second goal. He was in Narnia, right? Like that Ovechkin goal.
Dude, that defensive coverage on the second goal was awful. A comedy of errors.
Awful. But DeSmith also just went way out to challenge. And look, he made a bet. It didn't hit. We've all been there. But Ovechkin with the tap in there. Like, Ovechkin wasn't even like in that play. He was just standing at the side of the net. Did not think he was going to even get the puck. And when he gets the puck, Ovechkin knows how to put it in the back end, especially when that net is empty.
Both of those goals they scored were results from bad turnovers in the Canucks D zone. So a lot of people complaining about the icing call. Yes, it should have been called, but Ian Cole's got to look first before he sends a backhander up the boards.
We didn't even talk about the icing call.
It was pretty funny. As soon as it happened, the in-game entertainment team or whoever is responsible for the Jumbotron, they played a slow motion of that icing, and it felt like it was done just to fully ridicule the linesman.
I like how you said that word. Ridicule, I think, is what you wanted to
say.
Yeah,
I messed that up.
That's okay. Was watching that goal, and Hockey in Canada did something similar in the intermission where they looked at it. And Ron McLean, I don't know if you saw this because you weren't watching the broadcast, but Ron McLean goes, oh, yeah, well, you know, you could say he won the race to the dots. And I know that's not the rule, but you could say that. It's like, who cares? Like, what are you talking about? It's the most Ron McLean thing I've ever heard. It's just, yeah, well, here, I'm going to play devil's advocate. And I know what I'm saying isn't actually the rule, but here's a way to look at. What are you talking about? Anyways, I just love that Rick Tocchet said, the official apologized. Great. Why not bring it back center ice is what I wanted to know. Like, what if you know you made a mistake? I know the apology came later, but if you know you made a mistake, someone on that ice needed to know they made a mistake.
Well, I think the linesman was spending the entire length of skating back into the Canucks zone trying to explain and rationalize to DiGiuseppe why it was called icing. Like, that's what it looked like.
That's great.
And DiGiuseppe just had no expression the entire time. Was almost like not even acknowledging the words.
Dude, yeah.
Because if it was an apology, if it was an apology, PDG would have some reaction.
Well, would he?
Or he'd at least look, and even if he's not thrilled with it.
Dude, if it's an apology, PDG's reaction should, and I want to say would, be okay, we'll bring it back to center ice. You can do that.
Yeah, but he would react. That's the point, right?
Oh, okay, sure.
The point was he had almost a look of like when someone's giving you an explanation that you know is BS, and you're like, I just whatever. Like you say whatever you want.
We've all been there.
I'm just gonna shut my mouth.
Yeah.
But I'm also at the point where, as abysmal as the officiating has been,
yeah,
in the NHL these days, I'm not gonna, and not to say that, you or a lot of people on Twitter have been doing this, but we're not going to give the Canucks, we're not going to let them use that as an excuse for...
There's no benefit of the doubt at this point.
Yeah, like, again, we've made this point countless times. Things are going to go against you in the playoffs, yeah, especially if you're the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah.
That's one thing you can always
You can expect. Always count on that if they make the playoffs. You can't always count on that. But you can this year. They're going to make the playoffs. And like you said, there are going to be challenges. There's going to be adversity. And I just honestly, like, that's the overlapping theme of these last two games, Harm, is this team just crumbling as soon as there's some adversity at them.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm curious to see the response against Buffalo tomorrow, because, and then you got Montreal afterward. Those are two games that you should win. And the biggest thing is going to be actually sustaining your legs, sustaining your competitiveness, not taking your foot off the gas throughout that entire game. Like, just a clean, polished, professional, business-like performance. I think that's the perfect recipe for sort of flipping the narrative and turning this back into a month of March that has otherwise been pretty successful for this team.
Anything you want to say about the lines? I had an idea, but I want to save it for anyone else. You want to save? We'll chat about the lines more than anyone else. Okay. Okay. I'm gonna tell you about a couple of our sponsors. The first one being, I'm excited for this one. I'm excited to tell you about this one. Four Winds Brewing. We talk a lot about the Four Winds Light Lager because of the Four Winds Light the Lamp contest. But this brewery is known for a heck of a lot more than just a light lager. Four Winds also has a nice, robust lineup of IPAs. Whether you're into something nice and light but packed full of flavor in their 4.5% Featherweight IPA, or something a little more funky, fruity, and juicy in their World Beer Cup winning Juxtapose IPA, Four Winds has something hoppy to quench your thirst. Head to the Four Winds website to see their full lineup of IPAs and to have them delivered right to your door at fourwindsbrewing.ca.
By the way, one other point I wanted to mention on the power play, because I had a second to think about it.
All right.
When's the last time the second unit has scored?
That's a great point. I don't know.
Do you remember in 2019-20, that's the last time the Canucks, in terms of raw goals, they were first in the NHL. They're also top five in power play percentage. But because they'd drawn a lot of penalties, total goals, I believe they were tied with Edmonton for the lead. And what I remember about that year was that second unit was really potent, in part because of Brandon Sutter, but also you had Adam Gaudette on that left flank as a really effective shooter. I think Tanner Pearson was on that unit as well. The second unit was regularly chipping in, whereas now it feels like the second unit is, as soon as it take the ice, you're like, well, that's the end of the power play.
There's nobody on the second unit that has a goal this year. No.
No, there has
Hronek.
To be.
Hronek has two. Hronek.
One of them is probably with... when
Susie
with
has one.
First unit, actually, too.
I'm actually stunned looking at this. So Besser leads them in power play goals this year with 15. Pettersson is second at 11. JT Miller's third with 9. And then Andrei Kuzmenko is fourth with 3.
Wow.
Where's Quinn Hughes? With 2. Quinn Hughes, Pia Suter, Philip Hronek, and Elias Lindholm have 2. With 1, Carson Soucy, and $5 if you can figure it out. It's okay. I don't want you to.
Ian Cole? I don't know.
Anthony Beauvillier. That's the only other guy.
I thought it might be one of those situations where, like, they're defending a lead in the third period and they put out, like, I don't know, like an Ian Cole type defender, dying seconds, and he somehow scored, but.
No, not quite. That's concerning. That's concerning, no matter how you slice it. And that's why I came into the studio today, and I don't want to overanalyze. Oh, like, I think they're going to be fine at 5-5. I think they're going to get back to their staples, and they're going to start trying again, and it's going to look different. I really do. I think they're going to be fine for the playoffs when it comes to that. I am worried about the power play. That is all I'm worried about right now.
Yeah, that's a fair take.
And facing adversity. So, anyways, interpret that however you want. We're not going to waste more time talking about that game. Buffalo's tomorrow. Absolute frauds, man. You know that Buffalo team is just looking at the standing. Guys, we're only 5 points out of a playoff spot. Come on, we can do it. Let's just string some wins together, get back to our basics, and we're gonna be just fine.
Well, they also
Buffalo does this every
year. They lost 4-1 to Detroit in that huge game on the weekend.
Yeah.
Right? Just as they got their fan, gave their fan some hope.
Dude, they are the Vancouver Canucks. They are the Vancouver Canucks of the past 10 years.
Embarrassing.
Expansion Cousins.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, they're anyways. So what I'm trying to say, and I could say this better, we'll preview it tomorrow and I'll repeat this, I'm sure. But you look at it, and Buffalo's going to be saying, like, okay, guys, tough loss against Detroit there, but we're heading into Vancouver, only 5 points out of a playoff spot. We're chasing Detroit. We can do it, guys. Like, let's just get a win here. The Washington Capitals have more points than this. The Washington Capitals are closer to a playoff spot than the Buffalo Sabres. What I'm saying is the Sabres are going to be hungry. Canucks need to at least answer against the Sabres. They just can't lose that game. They can't.
Yeah.
And they might, but we'll talk about it tomorrow. We'll preview tomorrow's game on tomorrow's show. One thing I wanted to do, Harm, I'm really excited for this segment, is the fans' wish list for the rest of the season. You got 5 weeks left of the season, 4 or 5 weeks left of the NHL regular season. And for Canucks fans, you know you're going to make the playoffs, so that's not on your wish list, right? Making the playoffs isn't on the wish list like it is every other year, as we were chatting about the Buffalo Sabres. I'm talking about things around the league that you're looking for in the final weeks if you're a Canucks fan. And I was workshopping this with you over text, and you pointed out the obvious. You were like, well, isn't that just the same as what we talked about last week where we were chatting about ideal playoff opponents? So I'll knock that out. That's the first one on my list, is that you want Vegas to win, Nashville to lose, so that Nashville falls in that second spot or whatever, right? Like, you want a favorable playoff opponent, so obviously you're watching for that over the final weeks here. Moving past that, though, I'm going to just go with another one. This is another thing on a Canucks fans' wish list. The Oilers losing over the final month of the season. Do you know how insufferable our friends over at Oilers Nation would be if the Oilers come back and take the first spot in the Pacific before the end of the season? Insufferable.
Yeah. And
they're not that far. They're not that far behind.
Yeah. Also, you just don't want them to find their game right into the playoffs.
Yep.
It's better if they host slide, if Stuart Skinner loses some of his confidence and resummons his form from the last playoffs, that'd be great. And overall, the key honestly for this Oilers team always comes back to their defense and goaltending being a complete wild card, because we know they're offensive juggernauts, but they have these lulls and these stretches. They have some periods where they're stingy, they don't give up a lot, they're dominating possession because of their offense.
Mm-hmm.
They don't give up a lot, and Stuart Skinner will put together stretches where he's performing well. And those are the points where they look like, I don't want to say unbeatable, but that's where they enter that conversation where so many people crown them as Stanley Cup favorites heading into this season. But then you have moments where Evan Bouchard forgets how to play defense, where Darnell Nurse and Cody Ceci are not a reliable defense pair at all, and Stuart Skinner is Swiss cheese in net.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
That is what you're hoping for. We should send that directly to our friends over at Oilers Nation. I hope Aaron is our producer one day soon, so we can just repeat this segment for him. Okay, do you have anything that you like? What are you putting on your wish list? Because I got like five things here that I wanted to get to.
So the one thing that I'm looking for is making sure that Jake Oettinger stays playing at the subpar level. He's got an 896 save percentage this year, which I think is huge, because if Oettinger were to get back to playing like Jake Oettinger, I think the Dallas Stars are the best team in the Western Conference at that point.
I don't think that's a hot take at all. Like, that's a good take. You're talking about the Jake Oettinger that put up a 919 last year, and the Jake Oettinger that a lot of people thought would be in the Vezina conversation for this season, myself included. Like, I absolutely thought he was going to be there.
But also, you just look at their team, their roster up and down the lineup. First of all, year in, year out, that top line is consistently one of the best in the NHL. I know Roope Hintz and Jason Robertson and Pavelski aren't the biggest names, but whether it's controlling shots, chances, actual goals being the most important part, they consistently dominate and put up elite results for a first line. Then to follow that up with Matt Duchene has been the best free agent signing of this past summer. Plus, they're going to get Sagan back. So that second line of Duchene, Marchment, Sagan is one of the best second lines in the NHL. And then they don't even have a third line. They basically have another second line.
Yep.
When you look at Wyatt Johnston, Jamie Benn, and now Logan Stankoven, who we've spoken about. Johnston, too, by the way, has 16 goals in his last 29 games. He is on fire. He's one of the best young players in the NHL. Again, that's not a third line. That's another second line. That's the type of offensive depth that they have with their forward group. That top to bottom, man, you want to compare them to Colorado, for example. Yeah, the Avs big line is probably better than Dallas's first line, but Dallas's second and third lines are on another planet compared to Colorado. And then they brought in Chris Tanev to shore up their blue line, which fits a lot more nicely. Thomas Harley is having a breakout year as a top pair defender to complement Miro Heiskanen, so that blue line isn't just like last year in the playoffs. That blue line was just Miro Heiskanen and everybody else.
Yeah.
Whereas this year, now they've got Harley, now they've got Tanev. If they get Jake Oettinger playing like Jake Oettinger, I'm telling you, the Dallas Stars are a problem in the Western Conference.
And that's the thing and look, we keep bringing up the Stars as a comparable of the Canucks' path to being a contender. Like, that's the thing. When you're getting your supplemented help from these young players, guess what? Those young players are going to take steps. Like, those young players are going to take steps forward. Like, Wyatt Johnson's a better player this year than he was last year. Right? And that's going to happen next year, you would assume. And next year. And then you've got Logan Stankoven. And you've got Thomas Harley, as you just said. Like, that's the thing. When you build a team that way, you're going to find stuff like this, where even when one of your young core pieces in Jake Oettinger takes a step back, you have enough pieces ahead of him that can kind of supplement that. And man, yeah, the Stars are going to be scary if Oettinger plays the way he can. So what's your wish that, or the Canucks fan wish here? Should it be
Jake Oettinger continues struggling?
Okay.
Heading into the playoffs.
I like it. All right, I got one. Demko to return, obviously, and they're not worried that he's going to be out till playoffs. Rick Tocchet said that right away when Demko went out with his knee injury. Demko to return and to have three starts before the playoffs. My thought process here is just that spring training, or what is it called in hockey? Preseason. Sorry.
Spring training.
I'm watching a lot of spring training baseball, but you know what I mean. You know what I'm talking about. Preseason hockey. Starting goalies get 3 games. I think Demko actually got exactly 3 games, maybe 4. They get that amount of games for the preseason, and then they're into regular season games. They're good to go. And I know there's off-ice training and there's on-ice training that happens months before, but in terms of game action, that's all they're getting. Like, that's all the goalies are getting, and we know how well Thatcher Demko started this season with just 3-4 games of prep for the preseason. And I just want him to get at least 3 games. It's one that I'm quietly watching. I don't want to see this. Oh, Thatcher Demko returns for the last game of the year, gets shelled, and now he's ready for game one. Or not even get shelled, just plays the last game of the season. That's all he's able to do. Yep, he returned before the playoffs. We were told that's going to happen. Yeah, that happened. Okay, how confident are you going into game one? How confident is Thatcher Demko feeling going into game one if he doesn't get that chance? So that's on the wish list. I think that has to be pretty high on the wish list, is that Demko gets at least 3 games to prepare for the playoffs. You got another one?
This is a question because we were discussing the idea of Macklin Celebrini and what teams we not want him to go to. Obviously, Chicago is a team that they've got Bedard. They've had some luck there. And I think most Canucks fans don't want to see Celebrini, another stud from BC, going to Chicago. But here's the question. Would you rather Celebrini, if you had to pick your poison, Celebrini to Chicago or Celebrini to Anaheim? Mm. Because Anaheim is in your division and they have a stacked forward group emerging. When you think of Carlson, McTavish, Terry, Zegras, Cutter Gauthier. What poison would you pick?
I have to pick between those two in your scenario?
Yeah.
I like that. That's a good old quad scenario right there.
It's a tough one.
It is tough because you hate Chicago. You don't want Chicago to get anything.
Do you have some reaction in the YouTube live chat?
Yeah, well, people are going to hear it because we're on a little delay, but I want to hear this. I want to hear what people say here because it's a hard question to answer because let's break it down. Chicago, you don't like Chicago. You don't want Chicago to get anything nice, especially with the local products. But Anaheim... Anaheim. I'm going to say Anaheim. I had to think about it. I'm going to say Anaheim.
So you want him on Anaheim?
Yeah, I want him on Anaheim.
Yeah. I think to go back to the original question, what Canucks fans should be hoping for is that one of San Jose or Columbus wins the draft lottery.
Well, that's the thing. That's the conversation. So Captain Canuck in the chat, I'd rather him go to the Ducks, not going to lie. Karen Versation in the chat said, we want Macklin to go to Columbus, hide him on a poorly managed team in the East. And Harm, that's what I'm putting as my wish list for this one, is that he gets on Ottawa, Columbus, or... Yeah, Ottawa or Columbus is the dream. If he ends up on Ottawa or Columbus.
Low-key, I think it'd be great for the game if he ended up in Montreal too. And if you're the Canucks, you don't have to worry about Montreal in the East. Make the Leafs' life even harder.
Do you know what I've kind of realized this year? Just being on Twitter a little bit?
Yeah.
And I like what you said about the Leafs there. But Ottawa and Habs fans, like Sens and Habs fans, I used to think Leafs fans were really bad, right? But Leafs fans have kind of got a bit of that Canuck fan level of we hate our team too now.
Yeah.
Like I'm noticing that a lot more. Dude, it's every year now. I see Ottawa and Montreal fans taking victory laps in October, November, and then their team just falls off the face of the earth.
Ottawa is insufferable in that respect.
I think Ottawa takes the cake for me.
They win. They apparently win the offseason every year.
Yes.
Remember what was it? What was it called? Were they coined for Pierre Dorion like Hot Summer Pierre or something? What did
hot
they call
Pierre
it?
Summer.
Hot Pierre Summer. Jeez.
Yeah, like that. That should earn you title of worst fan base in the NHL. That alone. But I've just noticed that this year. I would love it though if Ottawa or Columbus, and yeah, you can throw Montreal in there too because they would terrorize the Leafs a little bit. But
Montreal, Ottawa, I actually don't think their fan base is that bad. They like to take, they get excited quickly. It's just I don't think anybody was there saying, "Oh, we're going to contend for a playoffs."
Fair enough. And you know what? I do like what they're building in Montreal. I do like it. But Ottawa, Columbus, yeah, you just want one of those completely mismanaged teams, and in that vein as well, maybe San Jose.
Yeah,
well,
San Jose is so far away from fielding a competitive roster that he can go to San Jose, and by the time San Jose is even relevant, the Canucks are probably aging out of their cup window.
Exactly. And here's another thing about why you don't want him to go to Chicago with Bedard. Look, love Connor Bedard on this show, love Connor Bedard in this city, but you don't want him to have any success, like team success. I hope Connor Bedard wins the scoring title every year and the Chicago Blackhawks finish outside of a playoff spot every year until he's a UFA. And then he says, you know what? I've had enough. I'm signing with Vancouver. That's what we all want.
Yeah.
You don't want Chicago to have success at all with Connor Bedard there. You want Connor Bedard to have success.
Yeah, you want it to be a dysfunctional organization.
You want it to just be like the Edmonton Oilers, like just with Peter Chiarelli.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you want.
It was hilarious, by the way. They brought in Taylor Hall as their big, this guy's going to play with Bedard. I liked the move at the time. Guy got hurt so quickly, which Taylor Hall tends to do, is not be able to stay healthy. And so now his running mate is, he's turned Philip Kurashev into a 40-point scorer.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I was looking at his line mates because there was that clip the other night, San Jose they were playing, and can't remember who it was, kind of pinned Bedard down on the ice, and Tyler Johnson came in with it, just a spear right to the groin.
Kalen Addison.
Thank you, Grady. First of all, not advocating for people to get speared in the groin, but if you're going to get speared in the groin, you have to be Brad Marchand or you have to be pinning down Connor Bedard and being a jackass like that. I think it's not fine. It's not good to spear people, but you know, it reminds me of that. I can't remember who it was. Brandon Prust. And he's like, worth every penny when he got fined for spearing Marchand. Remember?
Yeah.
Not advocating for people to get speared in the groin, but that's all I'm going to say. But yeah, Philip Khrushchev. I love that. I love that poll. Because Philip Khrushchev, every year prior to this one, couldn't get into double digits in goals. Never broke 25 points. Last year was his career high with 25 points in 70 games. He's up to 42 in 61
Bedard
games.
Deserves a commission on his next contract.
He's getting he's going to win the Calder, I think. I think I have number one on my Calder. There's a time when I thought about Brock Faber, and Brock Faber's had a great year, but he's going to be number two on my ballot. You put up you're a point per game player in your rookie year.
It's an AHL caliber squad. You take away Mrazek and Net, who's been pretty good, Alex Vlasic, who is their best defenseman now at this point, and that's basically an AHL roster.
Here's a fun game, Harm. Let's look at the Rockford Ice Hogs, okay, from 21-22, and see how many games these guys are now playing in the NHL. Which of these guys are in the NHL? I don't think this is going to work the way I wanted it to. I know Philip Khrushchev's on that team for a little bit.
You have to remember, they didn't really have any prospects.
Yeah, and
a lot
of these guys, unfortunately, that Chicago got were playing AHL games elsewhere. Or just they were like fourth liners on other teams, and now they're first liners or second liners on Chicago. So anyways, yes, the Rockford IceHawks. All right. Yeah, I had another one on my list here, and I know I'm making this segment take way longer than it should, but the final one that I'm going to say, a time machine to go back and actually trade for Tyler Toffoli at the deadline. Tyler Toffoli's got 4 goals and 1 assist in his last 2 games. Yes, I know it came against Anaheim and it came against Columbus, 2 goal games against both those teams. Prior to that, he had been pointless, so he's played 4 games with the Winnipeg Jets right now. He's got 4 goals and an assist. Not star-studded numbers, but I just look at this team and how they look so lifeless against the Washington Capitals. And you just wonder, you know, going out and getting that big acquisition in Tyler Toffoli. And I don't want to say big acquisition. Elias Lindholm was the big acquisition. I think that's one thing we haven't talked about is Elias Lindholm's playing third-line center right now. I think he should be in the top 6. Like, I think you got to put him back with Elias Pettersson. That's what you traded for when you traded for Elias Lindholm. You were hoping that you were going to find Elias Pettersson's winger. They haven't found it yet. Tyler Toffoli, go back and trade for Tyler Toffoli.
I'll actually disagree on that because
trade for Toffoli.
Here's the thing. Toffoli is a dream fit, but the only reason I'm saying no is because you can't trade all your draft picks away in 1 year.
I disagree.
Look at how good the Western Conference is. Think about it this way. You're probably going to lose pieces this offseason for cap purposes because of Pettersson's contract, Hronek's contract. So your team next season isn't going to be as deep. What happens next season when let's say the Canucks are playoff bound again, hopefully, and you're thinking, okay, we've got a couple of needs we've got to shore up, and then you go back and look at how many draft picks you've got, and you've got nothing to trade for.
You still got your first next year. But move it out.
You can't do it every year. Like, here's the thing. You're already not drafting the first 2 rounds this year.
Mm-hmm.
And 2025, 2026, you're already without your
thirds. Yep.
So you don't have a lot of pieces left. I'm typically not a believer to go all in, to push all your chips in on 1 year. I'd rather you kind of spread the wealth a little.
Yeah.
You already made your, like, here's the thing. As a management group, you made your big swing in Lindholm. You just have to make that work.
Got to live with it.
You got to live with it. You can't just blow all your chips away in 1 year.
See, I disagree. I just disagree. I think you can and you should. Like, I think they should have given up the second and the third. Like, it would be your 2025 second, right? Because they don't have a second this year. And then your 2024 third.
Well, then what would happen next year when we're saying they're short of top 4 defensemen?
First round pick
they're
still there.
Short like 2 forwards. One first round pick is not going to get you like 3 pieces. If that's what you end up needing.
Well, you don't need all of those pieces. Like, what did they address this year? They went out and got a bottom 4 defenseman in Nikita Zadorov. They gave up a third and a fourth for that.
They also got Lafferty.
You also have to remember, still got all their 2027 picks. Trade those.
The point I'm trying to make is you want a sustainable medium-term window, at least.
The point I'm trying to make is that I think you can basically run your draft capital like a pyramid scheme. Or a Ponzi scheme, I guess. Just keep trading them. You got more. Just get rid of them. Okay, people are agreeing with you. Unsurprisingly, in the YouTube live chat.
Are you genetic by chance?
I still want Toffoli on this team. I will say that. I still think moving a second and a third for Tyler Toffoli, especially if you could re-sign him, right? They could re-sign Toffoli. Second and a third, I do it every day of the week.
It's a great trade for Winnipeg, and I like Toffoli a lot too, but this is year one. This is the start of your window, hopefully.
You're right.
And it might be your best chance, and I get that aspect of it too, but also the Western Conference is six or seven teams deep in terms of legit bona fide cup contenders.
That's fair. Yeah, they do have a little bit of a deficit on the old draft pick board, but I don't know. They're going to move. And, you know, it always brings me back because at the start of the year when the Canucks go off on this heater, and you know how I do my very, very huge vibes takes. It was like the second week of the season. I said to Faber, like, yeah, the first round pick has to be in play at the deadline. He's like, what are you talking about? They can't trade the first round pick. Like, this team's nowhere near. I was like, no, first round, they're going to trade the first round pick. And I thought we made a bet. I know we have our Hughes goal bet that everybody remembers. I thought, longtime listeners of the show, tell me. So I'll maybe you have to go back and listen. I swear we made a bet that first round pick would get traded. And I said it would. I said it in like October.
So I thought actually we had a bet where me, you, and Faber were on the show together. And me and Faber bet you at the start of last season.
Yeah.
When they were struggling, was it that they were going to trade that 2023 pick, first rounder. I remember there was a bet like that. I don't know the exact parameters, but it was... I thought it was around trading a first.
I think it might have been you and I against Faber then, because I'm always in favor of trading picks. Like, I wouldn't have said no. Sorry,
me and Faber said they wouldn't trade it, and you said they would.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense then. I thought you were saying that I said they wouldn't trade it.
No. Me and Faber were saying they wouldn't trade it, and you said they would.
Okay, so what was the bet? Because I want to know now. Someone's going to go back and listen, and I think it's going to have to be me, unfortunately. We didn't even start anyone else. We just kept the segment going way too long. So let's get to... anyone else presented by DoorDash. Actually, sorry, Grady. I got to tell you about a different sponsor of ours, and that is Park Casino. Park is the official casino resort of the Vancouver Canucks, and they've got the BC Kitchen there. This is an old script. But I'll tell you about Park Casino off experience, okay? You go to the blackjack table. You go win yourself some blackjack. I love blackjack. Blackjack's a lot of fun. But Park Casino is just steps away from Rogers Arena, and if you bring your Canucks ticket, you can receive 15% off the game day menu with your game ticket at BC Kitchen. As I said a couple times there, like I said, steps away from Rogers Arena. And when you sign up for Encore Rewards, you get $10 free play to use in the Canucks Gaming Corner. Whether it's a game day or just night out with friends, let Park be your place to play. All right, now it's time for anyone else presented by DoorDash. It's our listener's chance to get involved and hit us up in the YouTube live chat. And it's also our listener's chance to get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. That's all capital letters, NATION, and the numbers 25. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change, terms do apply. Okay, we had a lot in here. We had a lot throughout the show. Harm, let's do this. Marcus Toe, how much stock do we put on the last few games of the season, win or lose? I'm going to say what I said earlier in the show. Depends what happens in those games. How much stock do I put in the Canucks power play? Humming at like 8% over the final month of the season? A lot. How much do I put in them kind of taking their foot off the gas and not really giving a crap about their games against the Buffalo Sabres? Well, I shouldn't use the Sabres as an example because I think they need to come out and make a statement against the Sabres because the Sabres are going to be trying pretty hard tomorrow night. I don't put much stock into that personally.
Yeah, last week of the season, I think everybody's looking ahead to the playoffs, and the biggest thing is just don't get hurt. So as we get into like the second week of April, that's the point where you're probably even having discussions about load managing certain guys, and staying healthy is just the biggest priority. We're not there yet, but that will be a conversation that that happens soon.
Captain Canuck says, thank you, Quads. He's so right. And that's the only comment from the chat I'm reading right now. This one from about the pick thing, trading picks. Captain Canuck said, I was so right. Something to think about.
By the way, instead of future considerations, a GM should be like, no, I want you to give me like a 2040 sixth round pick or something.
Oh, yeah. You can only can't you only
is
trade?
There a rule against that?
I thought you can only trade for 3 years from the current season. So what I was saying,
that
Harm,
might be right.
What I was
then
saying,
your Ponzi scheme doesn't really work.
No, it does. It does, because right now, go you look at their cap friendly thing, right? They don't have all their picks, right? They don't have all their picks. There's holes in their pick thing. 2027, all of those refill. And it just keeps happening and happening and happening. So you trade them every year, you get a new one. Actually, didn't the Oilers trade a 2027 pick? There's got to be a rule, right? How far in advance?
There probably is a rule.
There has to be. Can you trade NHL draft picks? There has to be a rule. Because I thought the Oilers... Here's the first thing I came up that I realized here. When you sign an offer sheet, you can give up to 4 years, right? In picks. Yeah. Regardless, it still works at some capacity, because I don't think you could trade like a 20. There has to be a rule. There has to be a limit, right? We just don't know what it is.
I remember Friedge talking about this, and I don't think there was.
I'm going to text a GM.
Oh, look at you. Girl.
Here, you talk. You pull up something from anyone else.
All right. This one from Jesse C. Not writing off Lindholm's production, but does it seem like Tocchet is leaning toward using him as a matchup line? Part two, what is the difference between shutdown and matchup to you guys? Answer the second part first. Shutdown, matchup, interchangeable for me. As far as the first part about Lindholm or Tocchet perhaps leaning toward using him as a matchup line, I don't think that's the purpose, because it's not as if we're seeing Lindholm consistently go up against the opposition's top players. I just think it's a case where Tocchet has looked at Lindholm's game and gone, I like him at center way more than I do wing. And part of the what I wanted to bring up in terms of the different line combos, and Lindholm is, I believe, now online with Mikheyev and Lafferty as of today's lines, is I wonder if the logic there is to surround him with fast wingers who pressure the puck and win battles. Because one thought that I've had recently is that Lindholm, put it this way, the Canucks play this up-tempo, in-your-face, puck pressure style. Lindholm doesn't really seem to play that type of game. He seems more based off efficiency, smarts, more of a cerebral playing style, rather than just being all-out aggressive. I'm going to be ferocious and tenacious on the puck. So I wonder if the thought process there is, if we can get Mikheyev and Lafferty to do the grunt work, chasing pucks back and bringing a speed and relentless motor, that if that can perhaps complement Lindholm a bit better. But I don't have a ton of faith in that, because Lindholm, I don't trust him to drive a line offensively at this point, and he's not exactly going to have a lot of help with Mikheyev and Lafferty, even though I've continued thinking that Mikheyev has started to get back to playing his game a lot better.
I think this lineup gets so many more options and so much deeper and so much more dangerous if Dakota Joshua gets back. And I'm not just talking about, oh, that third line that was so good is going to be back. When Dakota Joshua gets back, Teddy Bluger is no longer your fourth line center. Maybe he is, but you've got the option of putting Lindholm there at third line center. You've got the option of Lindholm going back in the top six, which is ultimately where I think he should be. I think Elias Lindholm needs to be playing in this team's top six. That's what they acquired him for. He has to go out and do it. He has to go out and do that for this team. That's what it's going to take. Like, that's what it's going to take for this team to get that bump that we're kind of waiting for and talking about, you know, trade deadline. Oh, I wish they went and got Toffoli. If Elias Lindholm comes out and just plays like a monster in the playoffs or the final week or two of the season, that's something I'm reading into in the final week of the season. And especially in the playoffs, like, nobody's going to care about Elias Lindholm. Mm-hmm. If he comes out and is a gunner in the playoffs, it's going to be huge for this team.
Yeah, you can see the lack of confidence too in that Washington game. Another play where the goalie sort of leaves the crease and is completely out of position. Looked like he had an empty net to shoot at. at least live from the press box. I didn't get a chance to see the replay because I was at the game. And he passed into the slot where there wasn't even an obvious shooter there instead of taking a crack at the net without the goalie in it.
Yeah. Lack confidence, right? Jesse C. Is the lack of rush chances due more to overall team speed, game process speed, or team structure? I want to say it's a bit of both, but I don't put a lot on overall team speed because I think you have to be fast to get into the forecheck.
I think it's just the way they want to play as a team stylistically. It's the same way that, like, people will say dump and chase is archaic, but you look at the teams that went deep in the playoffs, like Florida is a great example of a team that that a couple years ago when they first started winning the President's Trophy, for example, but they would struggle in the playoffs. It's because they were this rush-based team. And under Paul Maurice, they've adopted this heavy dump-and-chase type style where they don't really create a lot off the rush either. And it's obviously been really successful for them. Vegas is a team that has relied a lot on winning neutral zone battles and being a team that can go glassing out or high flipping a lot of pucks and just relying on their fast, speedy wingers to win battles, chase down those loose pucks and create offense that way. I think this is just a commitment to the way that the Canucks have played, but they are a little bit more extreme, right? Because a lot of teams will be, let's dump and chase first, but they still find ways to at least generate some looks off the rush. The Canucks feel like they're at the extreme. And again, that's where you look at SportLogic 32nd. They were at around the midway point of the season.
Karen Versation said this about Lindholm. It's shocking to me how poorly he's playing when you consider the fact that he's playing for a contract. Does he think he's still getting a monster 8-year deal from anyone if he plays like this? Man, you go back and think about that reported 8x8 deal that he turned down in Calgary. That might soon look like a Jonathan Huberdeau, please stay in Calgary deal. Like, you don't deserve this, but we'll give it to you anyway because we want you to live in Calgary for the next 8 years. Like we were talking about last week. Might go down looking like one of those for Elias Lindholm. Like, what does Elias Lindholm get on the open market right now?
I don't know. I don't know how teams value him.
He ain't Bo Horvat, and that's the Bo Horvat number, basically, right? Is the 8x8. And Horvat, I guess, got 8.5, but
maybe closer to Kadri, even though Kadri was, of course, a couple of years older when he signed that deal. He signed for like 7x7.
Exactly.
Even that, I would not want to sign that contract.
And how much of the Kadri deal had the Calgary come live in Calgary for multiple years of your life? I keep crapping on Calgary. Calgary, I've heard Calgary is nice sometimes. But, you know, I should say, how much do you want to come live in Alberta for just the winter?
Yeah.
The fall, the winter, but then you can go away in the summer. You got to overpay. That's what I'm trying to say, right? And not only that, you know, we're here, all these athletes fighting with the CRA to get their money back. Like, there's stuff going on with former Blue Jays right now. Obviously, we know about John Tavares and the pay your taxes chant that I was so happy started when he was on the ice. That was fantastic. But in all seriousness, like, this is a situation that definitely we should be clocking and keeping an eye on. we should be keeping an eye on that sort of thing. But I don't know. I'm looking at Lindholm in free agency, and I'm saying, okay, if the Canucks were to re-sign Lindholm, what would you be comfortable with them giving him?
I don't want him. He has to prove he's actually a fit at all.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point because he's not been a fit, and you wouldn't sign a player that's not a fit. Yeah.
I don't think, like, if you're Lindholm, why would you sign here?
That's fair.
Like, it even personally, it hasn't been a fit yet.
I bet in free agency, like, I can see free agency.
A team like Boston.
Boston is the first team that comes to mind. And I think like Boston would give him a 7x7, no problem.
Yeah, probably.
The Kadri. He ain't Bo Horvat. Anyways, anything else that you want to get to? What do we have here? Oh yeah, David Shaw. Are we overlooking that these are long seasons and rarely do power plays perform consistently? Yes, that's fine. But if you look at other teams around the league, and that's from David Shaw. Sorry, I didn't read your name. That is valid. But to be inconsistent for this long, where it's two full months where I'm looking at it and saying, okay, this has been something like, what's their power play percentage in the month of February? Because I know it wasn't very good. I just know since the start of February, it's been 15.1, and obviously they haven't been good.
Here, just put it this way. Since mid-November, since November 14th, so this is a 53-game sample, more than half the season, they're at 19.2%, which is 21st in the NHL.
Yeah.
I mean, they were red hot out of the gate, and since then, they've been below league average for more than half the season now.
But Harm, that's the thing. Like,
and I agree with the overall point that power plays absolutely go through ebbs and flows. Even the most dominant, even the most elite ones will have like a 10, 15, maybe even 20 game stretch where it's misfiring. But this is just a power play that hasn't found its
fastball.
Found its fastball since mid-November.
October, 26.7%. November, 29.8%. December, 12.5%. That's been their worst month. That was their worst month. January, I think January was really good for the power play, if I recall correctly. Am I remembering that right?
I think it was pretty
solid. Yeah, 30.3% in January. And then, like I said, February, it was 15% on the dot. March, the month we're in right now, folks, 15.3%. So yes, power plays go up and down. As we saw by looking at that each month, it's going up and down. But the baseline, like December, it went way down at 12.5%. That's really low. But then it came back up. It was at 30% the next month, right? Now we're looking at a two-month sample size where it's below 16%. That's not good enough. That's just not good enough. So that is where the concern lies for me. That's why I'm reading into that more than I am, you know, all this other stuff that we're talking about. Oh, lack of compete. This team can compete. They can. And someone asked about physicality in the playoffs. No, I'm not worried about it. Are you worried about physicality in the playoffs? Yeah. No, I'm not either. I think we've seen that they can do it and they can do this. And again, I know there's going to be someone out there saying, why aren't you applying the same logic to the power play? Because we haven't seen this team go through the stretch that they're in right now that we've seen for what? One period in Colorado, two periods against Washington where they don't look competitive at 5-on-5. We haven't seen them do that for 60 days like we have with the power play being ineffective. That's why I'm reading into that more, personally. Anything else in here? Yeah, just a lot of people saying Quads is right. How long until... Gnar, how long until Hunter Brustevich is a more effective player than Elias Lindholm? Not going to repeat it. Hunter Brustevich was not going to be a stylistic fit here.
It's fine.
Like, basically, no matter how good he turns out, I don't think Brustevich was going to work out here. Yeah. He's going to get PP one time. If he works out in Calgary, he's going to get PP one time in Calgary. I don't know.
He's a good prospect, but I'm not losing sleep over.
And he does build a lot of Lego, so it's a tough one, but tough one for me. Anyways, yeah, and this is another thing. This is what I keep going back to, Harm. This one from Mike Lavely in the YouTube live chat. The plan was to have Lindholm play wing. We should have just went after a winger. Lindholm has played center his entire career till this point. That's not technically true. He did play wing in Carolina, but to Mike's point, you traded him to get a winger. Like, you wanted him to play the wing, so play him at the wing now. Like, you're trying to make him play center now, and yeah, he's played center before, but guess what? When he was playing center and he was effective, he had Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk having the best years of their career. Ilya Mikheyev is having the worst year of his career. That's his winger right now. And then Sam Lafferty's there too. Like, that's not the same.
Yeah. I just think the coaching staff has gotten to a point where they're convinced he isn't a winger. And maybe they go back to it at some point. And I do think it's funny because we were probably asked the same question around, oh, do you shift Lindholm immediately to the top six wing now or when Joshua comes back? Yeah. And a week ago, because they were rolling, we were like, you know what? Top six is going fine for now. Just keep Lindholm there. But I think it is fair to say that you're not going to maximize his offensive production at center, and that if there do continue to be top six wing holes, at some point you have to revisit it. Now, if these top six line combos work, fine. But the only way you're okay with Lindholm at, let's say, 3C is if your top six is consistently firing on all cylinders, which remains to be seen.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how it turns out. We'll be back tomorrow to break down tomorrow night's game against Buffalo to give it a little preview. Probably do that one from the sauna tomorrow. But it'll be a good show. It'll be a good show, just like today's was a good show. We're going to wrap it up there, though. For my co-host, Harmon Dowler, and technical producer, Grady Sass, my name is Dave Guadrelli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Canucks Conversation. Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads, brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range, since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back, and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks. Back on. I got an answer from the GM that I texted. Don't end the live stream, Grady. You don't have to put me back on camera, but I got an answer. There's no limit to when to how yes, far in advance you I can trade. This is going to double check the CBA, but there's no limit. No limit, he doesn't think. But he did say 3 to 4 years is probably the outer edge of what any teams would ever discuss. Like, to his knowledge, there's never been a call that's like, yeah, we'll take your 2040 back. And he's like, 2040 years is ludicrous. Might as well be future considerations or nothing at that point. So my scheme kind of works. Just got to find another GM who thinks the same way I do. Get me in an NHL front office. All right. Signing off. David Guadrelli, Harmon Dial, Grady Sass once again.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.